Hi there, we're the Two Fat Expats, and while we're ample in both personality and gusto, that's not quite what the Fat Expats are about. Fat Expats make the most out of expat life, filling it up to the brim and packing it all in while they can. I'm Kirsty Rice, an Aussie based in Qatar in the Middle East, and in a moment you're going to meet Nikki Moffat, who's also an Aussie, but she's over in Hamburg, Germany. Between us, we've been in over 10 locations as expats in the past 15 years or so, and we've learnt in that time that expat life is much more fun the fatter you live it. Okay, let's get on with it, shall we? Let's dig in. Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Kirsty Rice. How are you? And how was your summer break?
My summer break was good. It was back to Australia, unlike someone I met yesterday who told me they went to 9 countries over their summer break. I think, Nikki, that's the thing. Like, a lot of people don't realise that expats have... there is definitely something that happens in the summer in the Northern Hemisphere. You know, when I was an expat in Asia, I can't remember a big 12-week break where people went off to their, you know, summer holidays. But it's definitely when you live in the Northern Hemisphere, people tend to head off for summer, as in, you know, lovely locations, poolside location. Yes, exactly. Whereas now, with 2 children in Australia and building a new house in Australia, really our summer breaks are really winter months. And so my summer, as it was spent in Australia in the winter and was very much about settling a second child into school there and enjoying the footy, glasses of red wine and meat pies. But you, Nikki Moffat, I want to hear about you. I want to hear about your summer because I do remember halfway through the summer, a little drama about a passport that got put in the washing machine. And I believe that happened at the end of a particularly harrowing weekend.
Yes, we did have a little hiccup. So this summer we had some excellent activities planned that we were so, so excited about. Our kids were like, we don't want to go anywhere. We just want to stay here. We don't want to go. Don't make us go anywhere. Since we've been here, every break we've been somewhere in the car and we don't want to go. My husband and I were like, that's fine. You can stay. So we had arranged for them to have people come and stay with them a couple of weekends so we could go away and do some fun and fabulous things, which we did. So the first weekend we went away, we went to Lake Como in Italy to meet friends from the States who lived in our neighborhood in America, which was amazing. I've never been to Lake Como. It's very beautiful. It's also very warm. And when you live in Hamburg in summer, it's so exciting to go somewhere warm. So we went down there and we're having a great day. We picked up a hire car in Milan. We drove down, just the two of us. We're being very fancy, we thought, because it's just two of us.
All of this is sounding very perfect about now.
We saw at the airport all the people with families, with kids and, you know, running around and drinks and food. And we're just like, we can do whatever we want. We got in the car and we just whizzed down to Lake Como and we went and had a drink at a cafe by the lake. And then our friends turned up. They came on the train from Rome and we met them. We had a long, long lunch and just having a wonderful time. We went and got the car. We drove to our Airbnb. They were staying at a very fancy hotel on the lake. We were staying at an Airbnb and be up the hill, but we sat on their veranda a lot, so it was just like we were staying there as well. We got to our Airbnb, the man showed us the garage, we put the car in the garage, we opened the boot of the car, and all our luggage was gone.
Oh my gosh.
It had been stolen. And this was just actually the icing on the cake because I've missed a crucial thing. While we were having lunch with our friends from the US, I took a phone call from a neighbor in America to tell us that our basement in our American house was flooding.
And this is the American house that you haven't been able to sell that is...
No, but we have renters.
Yes.
So we have renters and they were moving in 4 days and then our basement flooded. So it was already, I was already under a little bit of stress, but I was kind of trying to hold it together because there's really nothing you can do when you're on the other side of the world and your house is flooded. So you just got to let it go and let, you know, someone take care of it. Then I opened the boot and there was no bags and I just lost my a little bit, and I started, you know, being a bit emotional, and the guy said to me, the Airbnb guy said, oh, are you guys getting married tomorrow or something? I was like, no. He said, what was in the bags? I was like, oh, my clothes. I also lost, I have to say, some very, very special jewelry, which I still can't think about.
No.
My four bracelets, because I became this very clever traveler who took off all my silver jewelry before I went on the plane because, you know, you don't want to beep. And,
oh.
And I had to put it back on, and I don't like to think about it. But anyway, so that's fine. So my husband and I, we had three lovely days in Como. He wanted to immediately go back to Hamburg. Oh, just by the way, while this was happening, I was getting texts from my friends all around the world and in Hamburg telling me we should return to Hamburg immediately because we'd left our children and the G20 was on and there was rioting in our suburb and our car might be burnt and there might be damage to our apartment building.
Oh. So
it was awesome. Anyway, we just had another bottle of wine, put all our clothes in the washing machine, which is the benefit of Airbnb, and had dry clothes in the morning. And we wore the same clothes for 3 days. We did go and buy new underwear and haven't worn those clothes since. So that was our first weekend away, which was fabulous. And so on the Wednesday night, I was preparing for the next weekend away, which was to meet friends in London for a 50th. A friend of ours from Hong Kong, who we hadn't seen for years, was having a global 50th, as you do, and London was one of the destinations, so we could attend.
Hold it. I need to back up on that. A global 50th? What is a global 50th?
Well, I think when you're an expat for a long time and you're living in like a nice location that's got fairly low tax, fairly lenient tax laws like Hong Kong or Singapore, or perhaps the Middle East, then you have a roving 50th. So you go to many places and have many parties. They came to London. That was the first 50th, so we attended that. I think there's going to be one in Hong Kong, one in Singapore, and one in Australia.
Wow. Do they have four children? Please tell me they don't have four children.
I have three.
Oh, gosh.
Are you thinking ahead? Anyway, so we went. We'd arranged to stay in a hotel with some other friends from Hong Kong who we had not seen for 10 years. So we were so pumped and excited. And it's my husband's really one of his closest friends from Hong Kong that was having the birthday. So on the Wednesday, I went and bought some new luggage, as you do. And then I was washing our clothes because now we have half the amount of clothes that we had before we went away and got all our luggage stolen.
Of course.
And I said to my husband, now my husband travels a lot for works and he's very pedantic about the way his passport is kept and what happens to it and where it is at all times. And he keeps it in this very special folder. And on Wednesday night, I laid out the bags and I put all the washing in to do and I was getting the passports ready because you can travel anywhere in the EU without your passport except to the UK. They check your passport in and out. I said, listen, I can't find your passport because it's not in the folder. Where is it? And he said, oh, I left it in my shorts after the weekend. And he means his cargo shorts, which are big, bulky. So, you know, if you check pockets, if you're checking pockets before you wash, you just put your hands in your pockets at the top, right?
That's the excuse you told him.
No, dude, I mean, I don't remember the last time you washed cargo shorts, Kirsty, but if you did, you never check in the shorts. Anyway, I ran to the bathroom, the bathroom / laundry. I looked, there were the shorts sitting on the drying rack. I put my hands in the pockets and I pulled out many, many, many pieces of paper that used to be a passport.
Oh, I can't even imagine that phone call.
Oh, no, he was there. He was right behind me.
Oh, dear. Oh.
There was a high level of tenseness and swearing and yelling. Not at me, just very frustration.
Yes.
And the kids are like, what's wrong? Anyway, I could go on for another 10 minutes. But long story short, he got an emergency passport, flew in. There was 16 other disasters between then, but he made the party. So he came.
Oh, dear. Okay, Nikki. So
that summer,
and I imagine we will throw in pieces of our summer as the podcast goes on its weekly basis, because we're back after. When was the last podcast?
Well, I think the last podcast we did, we threw a sneaky one up at the end of summer,
right?
Which was the best holidays, but before that, it was June. So June to September.
Wow. Okay. So we'll be back and into it now with, I mean, each season's usually somewhere around 23, 24 episodes, isn't it? So get ready to be stuck with us, people, because we're here for the long haul, which is why it's nice to have a bit of a break in the summer. But we're going to change up things up a bit, because a couple of things have happened over the summer. And one is, we used to have a Two Fat Expats Facebook page, and then a very clever listener said to us one day, hey, why don't you actually have a group? It would be, you know, far more interactive. And I sent you a note and said, Nikki, why don't we have a group? And then you promptly sort of made a group 5 minutes later. So we now have a group with, how many people are in the group now?
I think it's about 2,500 about.
Wow.
So we had the page, I think we haven't migrated everyone from the page yet. We're working on the migration, because we do intend to shut the page down.
Yes, the page will get shut down and then we'll just have the group. So what we used to do was we'd have a topic for the week and we would sort of bang on about that topic. We'd bring in a couple of interviewees who were usually expats who had a unique sort of story to tell regarding that topic. But I was thinking, and I sort of ran this by you, I gave you, you know what, 24 hours notice, Nikki? That now that we have this fabulous group that has all of these conversations, and you can find that group on Two Fat Expats if you just search under groups in Facebook. But now that we have this group and there's all of these conversations, that maybe it'd be a good idea to spend the first sort of 15 minutes doing what's hot in the group, because sometimes we miss what's, you know, a certain post that come up and down depending on what sort of time zone you're in. So I just picked out a few things that seem to have got a lot of comments in the last, you know, couple of weeks. One of those, Nikki, was me when I returned from holidays, stepped on the scales and did my usual thing that I do after each holiday, is realize, oh, I'm now, you know, 3 or 4 kilos heavier. And I don't know why I'm continually on this trail, because I do nothing to make sure that I'm not 3 or 4 kilos heavier. It's like I get home for the summer, which isn't the summer, it's the winter in Australia, and I just start eating chocolate and drinking red wine and having pies from the bakery and, you know, drinking, you know,
Star of Greece.
Yep, going to the Star of Greece down at Port Wollonga, and, you know, just sort of having 5 meals a day with everybody that I run into and eating in the car on the way to Remark. And I don't know why I think, oh, well, I'm not going to gain weight. Do you know, this is holidays, you know, you're not going to gain weight. But I do, but every year I put on a few kilos and I never lose it. Do you know, I just come back a little bit fatter and rearrange my wardrobe and continue on. And so every year when you're putting on a few kilos, we all know our math.
It adds up.
Right. So I put a post in about intermittent fasting, because when I was home, my cousin Bianca had started something called the 16-8. Had you heard of the 16-8, Nikki?
It has been swirling around a little bit on the periphery of my social media. So yes, I mean, I have heard of it. I have read a little bit about it before, but it went off when you mentioned it in the group. So that's why it's in what's hot in the group.
Yes. So a lot of people have done the 5-2, which you eat for 5 days, don't eat for 2 days. And the 16-8 is you eat for the 8 and you don't eat for the 16. So,
and that's hours, not days.
Yes, that's hours, not days. And so I have chosen to, I start eating at 12:30, finish eating at 8:30, and I'll have lunch and then usually a late afternoon snack and then dinner and we're done. What are you doing?
I am doing 11:30 to 7:30, but we were discussing this morning and I am struggling because after I eat my first meal, I'm not really hungry and I have to force myself to eat to finish off in the time frame. My daughter runs around the house saying, "Mom, Mom, quick, eat something." But then I wake up starving and I can't. But it's only I think it's my third day or fourth day. So I'm going to give myself a couple more days because I really do want to try and keep having the evening meal with the family because I think that's important.
Yes.
And that's the only meal that we eat together at any time. So usually, well, certainly on school days and work days. So I just want to try and keep that in. So I'm going to give myself a few more days. But if that doesn't work, I'm going to go and change it and go back to 10 to 6 or something.
Right.
And be able to eat a bit earlier in the morning.
Yeah, because I said this to you as well. When I had two teenage daughters in the house, before I was evil and sent them off to boarding school, but when I had two teenage daughters, I really struggled with the idea of doing the 5-2 because I just did not want my daughters to see me not eat. Like, I just didn't like the message. Yeah. And I agree with you. Like, there's something about that evening family meal as well, whereas I find nobody notices if I don't eat breakfast. Nobody cares. Like, they're all busy doing their own thing. And it's madness and people are busy and, you know, you're pulling out clarinets, and lost homework and all the rest of it and bundling people in the car. And, you know, no one's here at lunch and so it's just that evening meal. But, yeah, I love it because for me, I am a person that could skip breakfast in the past. So I actually think this might be my thing, but I also understand some people have to have breakfast. You know, this would be a terrible thing for them. But yes, yeah, so mine is I'm drinking 3 liters of water, which is a ridiculous amount of water. I'm doing the 16-8. I'm doing 30 minutes of exercise a day, and that's my week one. And so on Wednesday, I will have a little weigh-in to see if it's worked.
Well, my scales are out. So I had to go and buy some AAA batteries. So I've been doing this and I haven't been measuring. So I'm going to just have to measure at the end of 1 week and then go from there. But we'll see. We'll talk about it. I like to lose weight in pounds. I like to have my weight in kilos but lose in pounds.
Right. I wonder if I can switch my thingy over to pounds. I bet I can.
I bet you can.
Yes. Okay, all right, enough of that. So
Moving on.
One of the other things that was on was Bree talking about what if relocation is not right for your family. Did you read that one?
I did read that one, and as soon as I saw it, I thought, oh, this would be good to talk about on the podcast, but really very unkind for her personal pain. But I think that it's fair to discuss it because there was a lot of discussion about it in the group. And there was also some really good advice, I thought.
Yeah, like I think the general advice was, so Bree had said that she's basically, they've relocated. She's thinking it's a really bad move for their family. And she was asking the question, you know, what do you do if you just start to think this place is just not right for us? Like, what do we do? And the general advice was to give yourself a year, which I think is very true because I think it takes an entire year. I mean, I would have even said 18 months, but I think it takes an entire year before you finally find yourself in your car thinking, oh my gosh, I actually know how to get to that place that someone talked about. And I didn't get lost today when I had to drive across the other side of town. But I thought there was a comment by a woman called Annie who said, don't see it as a failure. You tried, it did not work out. The end of it will happen sooner than later. And I thought that was very sweet. We really do have a very good community there, Nikki.
Yeah. Someone else, Isabel, said just be sure to understand what is not fitting for you. So often it's easy to blame a place when the challenges are more related to a specific issue that you might need to address. And I have no idea if that's the case in Bree's case, but I can certainly relate to that because, you know, if something's not right for you, you could easily be blaming it on, you know, something that's totally unrelated to where you're living or what the move.
That's so true, isn't it? Like, yeah, if you're in a bad mental place yourself, in a bad mental space. One of the other things I loved was the photo of the Fat Expats meetup in Singapore.
Absolutely. I think it was Celine had suggested, had put in that people in Singapore meet up in real life, and I think they had a coffee at Jones the Grocer.
Yes. And so Celine and our lovely Kelly was also there as well. So if anyone wants to see it, there's a pic in the page. But of course, our last big Fat Expat meetup was in that we had in Singapore. I think we had 75 women or somewhere around that point, and we did the reading. If anyone ever wants to listen to it, there is some audio, but this one didn't involve us, which was even better, Nikki, because we went for everyone with our stories.
But, yeah. No one had to listen to us. No. Yeah. Come on, Kirsty. People love to listen to you. Oh. Yeah, no, and that's awesome. And it seems like they might do a regular thing, so that would be great.
Yeah. I've said to Celine, so if there's other people that are out there in Singapore that want to get together and have a meet-up, I think they're going to put something else on the Facebook group again. And I think, Nikki, we'll have to work out, like, our little events page and within there and put stuff in the events page, maybe in the group.
Yes, working a group is a whole different thing to working a page, Kirsty. We've got a lot to learn.
Now, I'm actually thinking I might like to have a little Fat Expats coffee morning in Doha as well, so I might try and organise that. Would you be brave enough, and I'm really putting you on the spot here because I haven't talked to you about it, but would you be brave enough to have one in Hamburg, Nikki?
Well, sure, I'd be brave enough to have one in Hamburg. I'm not sure if anyone wants to come if you're not here, but okay.
Well, it's just coffee, isn't it?
I know, it is coffee. But also, if anyone in Frankfurt's interested, I'm very interested in going to Frankfurt.
Now, why do you want to go to Frankfurt?
Well, because there's a Chipotle in Frankfurt. And
isn't Chipotle like one of those American franchises?
Yes, absolutely. But it has excellent sort of pseudo faux Mexican food and something that we all miss from America. And when I came here, my American friend here said, oh, there's one in Frankfurt. I said, we should totally go to Frankfurt. So I've been looking for an excuse ever since. So if there's any expats down in Frankfurt, I'm in. Just give me a time and day. You don't have to come to Chipotle with me. I'd like to do that by myself. It'd be a little bit of a religious experience. That's my first burrito bowl after so long. But I'm down for that. But sure, yes, if there's anyone in Hamburg, that's probably a lot closer for me.
I was just thinking, because I'll get on to the friend situation with you later, but I was just thinking it's time for me to sort of get out there a bit more. And I wouldn't mind, you know, just having a coffee with a bunch of women and, you know, making some new friends. So I thought I'd give that a go. Okay, next thing, Nikki, this cracked me up on the page. Khadija pointed out, she asked people, what random item do you miss? And I hadn't realised until Khadija pointed this out, but she said she misses window sills. And she's right. She is bang on. There are no window sills in the Middle East. And I don't know why we don't have window sills. But I thought, you know, what started from Khadija's what do you miss, you know, was a huge, you know, array of comments. But some of them were very funny. The someone wrote a normal plumbing system where you just turn it on with one knob.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I don't know if that's that normal in Australia, because I reckon my mum and dad, at their showers, we still have a hot tap and a cold tap in the shower. And then you kind of get it just right for you.
And then you get in.
Yeah, and then you get in. That's right. But I think here I have just one knob with the
I have just one knob.
You have one knob? Someone else said, who'd obviously lived in Japan, I made sure we'll never miss warm toilet seats from Japan because they come with us when we move from country to country. So is she saying that she takes heated toilet seats with her?
That's what she's saying. You can buy them and take them and move them with you. I guess you just have to rig them up to the power source when you move.
That's what I'm thinking. Like, do they have like a little plug on the back of them? Like, how does that work?
I've got no idea. But if you live in a big American house with seven toilets, that's a lot of toilet seats you have to take ceiling fans, totally miss ceiling fans.
Yes.
Carpet, I don't miss carpet.
No.
I don't miss carpet. Do you miss carpet?
No, we have, you know, being in the Middle East, we have, you know, quite a few floor rugs and things like that. Tile. And then in our new house in Australia, it's a lot of cement. Well, it is cement. We've got a burnished concrete floor. And we're putting sort of those rattan kind of rugs down.
Yes.
Someone said they really miss having a laundry tub. And once again, I hadn't realised I don't have a laundry tub here.
No, not doing a lot of laundry though, so you wouldn't notice. I don't have a laundry tub here either. I have a laundry / bathroom, so I have a bath in the laundry.
Now, so aren't you European now? I thought your laundry / bathroom was in your kitchen.
No, dude, I'm not that European. Let's move on.
Now, someone else said a draining board next to the sink. I have that. I have two.
Did you have that in America, though? Because I didn't. And I noticed that Edwina, who also lives in Australia and that also lives in America, said when she asked for a draining board sink in her reno, the guy looked at me like she had two heads.
I thought that was fantastic. But weirdly, we didn't have, in our old house in Australia, didn't have a draining board. Had to sort of lay down the, or we had a little one or something, and then we had to lay down the tea towel and, you know, put things on top of. The one that I thought was really sweet and fascinating was the amount of Westerners who said that they really missed the sound of the mosque, and then the amount of non-Christians who miss the sound of the church bells.
Yes. It's interesting. We have church bells here. We live very close to a church, and I'm quite enjoying them, but I don't go there, but I enjoy listening to them.
Yeah.
I would miss them if I moved away, I think.
I know I would really miss the mosque. I think this is our, let me quickly, 1, 2, 3, 4th predominantly Muslim country, and I've got very used to it. And here in Qatar, the sound of the mosque and the call to prayer is really absolutely stunning. Like, it's just beautiful. It's very peaceful. So yeah, I would be sad about, you know, not having that as part of the day. Okay. All right. So that was what was hot in the group this week. So please come and join our Facebook group. Look for Two Fat Expats under the group, and you too can be part of the conversation. We're doing a hot topic for this week, and I had put, how do you make friends when you're not in kindergarten, which to me is a Seinfeld reference. In, I don't know if you can remember, there was an episode of Seinfeld where he talked about making new friends. One of the comments he said was, you know, he didn't need any new friends because he had enough. He was full. There were no vacancies. But yes, one of the other things he said about was how easy it is to make friends when you're a kid and you're in kindergarten or whatever, in that it's as simple as, you've got a yellow shirt, I've got a yellow shirt, let's be best friends. Okay, you know, and it was really that easy. And I think obviously it gets harder to make great friends as you get older. And I had found this article. There'll be a link on our Two Fat Expat webpage. Yeah, so when we say show notes, I should say that's really just twofatexpats.com. If you go to twofatexpats.com, you'll find everything we talk about and every reference that we've made. But this article was called How to Make Friends as an Adult, and I just thought it would be super helpful for new expats who were out there, because it is a skill, I reckon, that you gain or lose and worth referencing. So number one was stay friends with your old friends. And initially when I read that, I thought, well, that doesn't help if you're going to a new location. But I think it is your old friends that can help you through that phase as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. It is hard. It's so hard because you feel like you're missing out when you maintain your contacts with your old friends, but you really need them to sort of support you.
Yeah, and one thing you can also do, particularly in the expat world, if this is your second or third location, is you reach out to your old friends as well to say, does anybody know anyone in, you know, wherever it is that you're going as well? Because quite often your old friends might have a connection and know you and know someone that might be, you know, of great value, or they know someone who knows someone. Do you know, it's really worth reaching out to your old friends. But yeah, you've got to have a friend to sort of touch base with to say today was completely crapola.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Brings to mind this time last year when I didn't have a kitchen and my son fell on a tree and broke his hip.
Yes.
And I had no one to sort of just commiserate with me and say, God, that's the most awful thing I've ever heard. So I had to reach out to all my old friends so they could support me.
That's it, isn't it, Nikki? Because you're 1 year on. So where do you think you sit 1 year on? Do you feel like you've cracked it and sort of made, for want of a better term, enough friends, or do you feel like this has been much harder? Like, has it been harder to make friends in Germany than it was in the States?
I'm gonna say yes, but there are reasons behind it. We chose to live far from the school, not close to the school. My kids are older, they don't go on play dates every day often anymore. We had an incident where we had 6 weeks on crutches right at the beginning of the year. You know, there were reasons for it. And I, another thing that we talked about earlier when we were discussing this episode was I don't tend to go for one or two people. I'm more a group person. So I need to spread my friendship. And I haven't necessarily got all those little pieces together yet. But I've got seriously two or three really awesome friends who I could call at 3 o'clock in the morning, which is all you need. Yeah. Really.
Yeah.
To feel.
Yeah. Now, one of the other tips in this article was to listen, and it said, don't be interesting, be interested. And I have some shocking listening skills at times.
I'm crap at that.
Oh, I'm terrible because I get so excited and I just want to jump in and tell someone the story about, oh, yeah, I understand that. That's like when I went to blah, blah, blah. And the other thing you can do when you're just foaming off at the mouth is, when we lived in blah, 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 do you know when you still stuck?
Sound pretentious.
Yes, yeah. And or if you're stuck back in that location because you really haven't merged into your new location yet, so you want to talk about everything that happened in the old location. So, I think that's a good one. Don't be interesting, be interested. And the third one was show vulnerability to open up a bit. And it says, don't go full TMI, but make yourself a little bit vulnerable. Nobody becomes besties by only discussing the weather.
Yeah, I'm not surprised I don't have a lot of friends so far. I'm like 0 for 2 here. I go full vulnerability and give way TMI.
Well, that's okay though. I think
we'll see.
I don't think I'm TMI anymore. I think old Kirsty would have been TMI, but probably because I'm writing it all in the blog, so they've read it all anyway. Yeah. They know. There's not much to learn. Okay, number four is don't be a stranger. You need to get in touch. And remember, not keeping in touch is how you got to this problem in the first place. So, yeah, that's just keeping connections. And number five was start a group. And I thought this stat was interesting. Denmark has the happiest people in the world, and 92% of them are members of some kind of social group.
Yeah, so they belong. They belong to a group.
Okay, so you also had an article, Nikki, for
yes, I did have
friends.
An article. It wasn't about making friends as much as it was about keeping friends or moving friends between friendship groups. So it said it was in The Atlantic, and I will put the link in the show notes. So it's Atlantic is a lovely long read, as they all are. Around the thing, so friendships don't just happen. They just don't drop out of the sky. And it was looking at some studies that people had done on friendship. So like any relationship, friendships take effort and work, but friendships are often the last part of your life to receive the effort because people spend their energy on work, family, and romance or their partner. So if they kind of leave friendship down the bottom to work on. And there's quite an interesting part of it that talked about a lifetime track. So a lifetime track is a term that zoologists use to describe the entire sum of an animal's movements from birth to death. Mm. So for example, this guy who did the study, his great grandfather's entire life took place in a square of 40 kilometers squared. And his grandfather's life was 400 square kilometers. His father's life was 4,000, and his own life was globally like 40,000 kilometer square area.
Wow.
So if you think about it in those terms, that's got a huge impact from a friendship perspective. So, and this had a thing in here, Kirsty, and I'm not sure that I agree with it, but it's, we can discuss it. It said that moving is associated with shallower friendships because people who move frequently are more willing to dispose of their friends, perhaps because they get used to losing them. So I don't know. I have always thought that moving around creates deeper friendships.
Yeah. And that would suggest that third culture kids or expat kids are all incredibly shallow. Because even if you're an expat, if you're an expat kid that has lived in the same expat location, you've still been affected by it because you've had friends that have come and gone and come and gone. My youngest son said to me yesterday, he's made this brand new friend and who's new at school this year, and they I think they met at the foosball table, and now they're doing table tennis together two nights a week. And you know, same thing, saw each other. They met at school, but he's hit middle school and there's a foosball table there, and they partnered up on the first day and they've just stayed friends ever since. Do you know that whole you've got a foosball want, I've got a foosball want, let's be best friends. But he said to me yesterday, oh, and blah, 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 the name of this little fellow, he said he probably won't be around too long because his parents are in the Air Force. And so, you know, he said he's moved two or three times in the last 6 years. And I was thinking, oh, that's tough to think, you know, you've just made friends with this guy and he's putting it out there for you pretty quickly that this is who I am, this is my life, you know, this is what it's going to be.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I bristled up a little bit at that. I felt that, you know, you can have deep relationships, and I think maybe before the internet, the World Wide Web, which, you know, we became expats really before Facebook, which is unthinkable anymore. You know, when you had to keep in contact with letters and things, I probably would have lost more friends than I have now.
Yes. Well, see, there's also that conversation now that because of Facebook and social media, people aren't losing friends like they used to, and maybe not in a good way. Like friendships that would have died a natural death are not dying a natural death because there's that constant update. But yeah, look, I don't think they're more shallow, but I do think what happens is I have beautiful expat friends that I absolutely adore, but it's almost like a grieving process because I know that we will never live in the same place together again. And that is really hard.
You almost have to, while grieving that, but you have to seek out a friendship with someone who, you know, the same thing might happen again with.
Yes.
Which is crazy to me almost. Yeah. But I try and think about it in the point of view that, you know, I know that when you retire, you're going to travel around Australia with your caravan. But I think I might like to go and stay with all my friends all over the world.
See, my husband has said no, he won't. We were walking through a caravan park over the summer, and I was just like, oh, wow, look at theirs. Theirs has got a special annex. Oh, wow, look at theirs. Theirs has got almost like a bar in there. Oh, wow. And he finally just stopped me and just said, it's never, ever going to happen. We are never going to be caravan people. I was like,
well, you maybe get a couple of girlfriends and do it with them.
There you go.
There's always options.
Yeah.
Okay, so another thing the article says is that moving the friendship cycle, so moving your friendship along, it does take a push from someone. So you can get stuck by saying, oh, they haven't called me, I'm not going to call them. You know, if I call them now and they haven't called me for this long, what does that mean? And the article said, if you want to speak to your friend, just call them or message them or do something. You know, you've got to, you can't be stuck in that cycle of, oh, will I, won't I, what, how much time has passed, that kind of thing. Which I think as expats, you hardly ever do because you've just got to jump in and suck it up.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I would say that. Like, if someone says, call me, you go, okay, I will. And you do. Like, it's not like you. And I think that I really lost the opportunity to have a really good friendship because I didn't do that. And I was in Hong Kong and I'd been there for sort of 4 years maybe. And it was someone from my hometown and my mum put me in contact with them and they just moved there. And we kind of had a few messages backwards and forwards and then I kind of just let it go. And now on Facebook, we've got like 25 mutual friends. So loads of my Hong Kong friends became friends with this person after I left.
Oh, no. Yeah.
And I missed that. I missed the opportunity to, and, you know, to become friends with someone who, by all accounts, is a really cool person. But I was the slacker. So,
yes.
I don't know. I've decided not to be such a slacker anymore.
Yeah.
One study mentioned in the article said the idea of putting friendships in containers. So, you know, if you have friends with book club, they're your book club friends. You know, if you have other friends who are girlfriends, have a dinner once a week or once a month or something, and then it's easy to maintain those friendships when you have a certain cycle that you... And I guess that goes back to Denmark and social groups. Like, social groups are organized.
Yes. Yes.
So you know that...
And those social groups too actually often make you go out of the realm of the usual people that you're seeing. So I know that sometimes when I've been in book groups, and I'm not in a book group at the moment, but when I have been in book groups in the past, they've been with people that I haven't normally seen during the week or at school, or, you know, they're not in my usual realm. So that's fantastic because you suddenly get this whole different feeling and conversation and you're talking about stuff you wouldn't normally talk about. So, yeah, I totally agree. Now, Nikki, one of the things we wanted to do is get thoughts from the group. And
yes.
I am going to bang on about this over and over and over again in the podcast from now on because I really want to make this happen. Now, on our Two Fat Expats website, twofatexpats.com, we have a little microphone button and we're always asking people to press the microphone button and leave us a message. It is exactly the same as calling us and leaving a message or, you know, writing us a message or whatever, but go and push the button, leave us a message. And what we're going to do now with that button is use it for the topic of the group, the topic of the week, the hot topic. So I would love to hear from people on who their first expat friend was and how they made them. Because I think that would be a great way. And what we'd love to do is just chop up all those little sound bites. So maybe I would, to give an example, come in, press the microphone button and say, I'm Kirsty, I'm an Australian living in Qatar. My first expat friend was Leah, and I made her at baby group when she noticed my pink shoes and thought they were pretty cool and invited me out for coffee. Although that isn't the exact story, because what my friend Leah did, no, because I was just thinking about this. So my friend Leah is Scottish and lives in Houston. And she's all safe and dry at the moment. There was this tiny little baby group, or there was a, they call it a well baby clinic. Have you heard that term? I think it's a UK thing to have a well baby clinic. And it's the place where you take your brand new baby and someone weighs it and measures it and tells you how it's going and all the rest of it. And it was an amazing woman called Barbara Jason who started this World Baby Clinic in Kemang in Jakarta. But you would go along, and I was, you know, brand new, nervous mother, no idea what I was doing. And I think my baby, my little Lizzie, would have been, you know, 2 weeks old the first time I went there. And so you'd go in and there'd be a chocolate cake and you could have a piece of cake and, you know, and it was a chance to meet people. But there was this woman, and, you know, I don't know, because you're not someone that singles out people, you do go for groups, but there was... I have always been someone that will spot someone across a room and go, oh, I like her. She looks like she could be my type of person, do you know? And Leah had this strong Scottish accent at the and still does, although I think it's definitely mellowed over the 20 years or 18 years that I've known her. But she was saying in her strong Scottish accent, someone asked what her son's name was, which was Josh, but she was saying she wanted to call him Luke. she said. But with her name being Leah and her wanting to call her son Luke, her husband thought it was just way too Star Wars to have Leah and Luke.
Luke and Leia.
Yes. And I was just listening to
That's her. A good story.
Yeah, and I was listening to her have this conversation with someone else while she was sort of, you know, holding on to this baby who was just a few weeks older than mine. And I was wearing these pink shoes, which she thought was great. But what actually happened was she then asked everyone around me if they wanted to go and grab a coffee and did not ask me.
Oh.
And she can't remember this at all, but I remember just sitting there thinking, oh, I really want to be friends with you. But, you know, I didn't make eye contact at the right time for her to just sort of look at me and go, how about you? Do you know, like, it just didn't happen. But the next week we started talking because we went on, you know, same day, same time. And there we were, and we went out for coffee, and we just became really quite inseparable and really great friends, to the point that when she had her second baby, I was living in Kuala Lumpur, and she came and stayed with me to go and have the baby in Kuala Lumpur. She decided, well, it was just as easy to do that. So it was fantastic. It was beautiful. So I was very, very lucky. And we ended up in Houston as well together. So there you go. That completely ruins that idea of you'll never live in the same place again, doesn't it?
That is an awesome story, though. Mm-hmm. That would have to be a chapter in the book, surely. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, I hadn't thought about that.
Okay, now, talking about books.
But no. I want to know about you. Who was your first expat friend and how did you make them?
Well, I made my first expat friends when I moved to Hong Kong. And the only people I knew in Hong Kong was a friend of my husband, so some Adelaide people, and two of my ex-boyfriends, both living in Hong Kong. So I went to a thing in Hong Kong at the YMCA or the YWCA. No, I think it was the YMCA. And they run a course for newcomers to Hong Kong. And they, you know, they do things where they show you how to catch public transport, where to go to supermarkets. You know, you do a walk around the wet markets, all that kind of stuff. So I met a great, great group of girls on that course. And there were sort of three or four that I was sort of angling to be a little bit better friends with. And so I didn't sort of hone in on one person, but certainly a couple. And we were invited to a dinner party at one of their houses. And this is the same couple that we just went to the 50th in London for. She was serving. She said to me in the kitchen, I'm so nervous. You know, my first dinner party here in a new country, all new friends. I hope everyone eats the food. And it was salmon with green beans with anchovies.
Oh,
and I don't eat any seafood, Kirsty. You know that. So I went straight to my husband and said to him, do not speak to me about the meal. Do not nudge me. Do not do anything. So we sat down and there was salmon and these green beans with anchovies. And there was some kind of sauce for the salmon. So I just poured so much sauce on my plate. And just was, and then my husband, Sam's kicking me under the table the whole time saying, how's the salmon? I was like, shut the fuck up. I'm eating it. Anyway, so that's how I met my first friends in Hong Kong.
Did you eat any of the salmon? Because I have actually sat with you and watched you recoil in the face of seafood. So did you eat any of it?
I did eat a little bit of it, but I did hide some more of it on various parts of my plate, like a small child.
Okay, let's move into social media and beyond. But Nikki, tell me, what's your favourite podcast at the moment? What have you been listening to?
Well, over summer I listened to a whole lot of new stuff, and I have really gotten into No Such Thing as a Fish. Have you listened to that?
I haven't. Tell me about it.
It's kind of awesome. It's quite old. It's been around for ages. So there's 181 back episodes.
Wow.
So, and it's from a series of podcasts called QI, Quite Interesting. So there's one called No Such Thing as a Fish, No Such Thing as the News, and the Museum of Curiosity. And I've only listened to No Such Thing as a Fish. There's three English people, Dan, Anna, and Andy, and they bring up interesting and random facts, and then they all talk about the particular fact. So the most recent one was actually coincidentally included facts about fish, which was the movie Jaws. So did you know this, Kirsty, that the first Jaws director was originally someone else who kept referring to the shark as a whale, and so he was replaced by Steven Spielberg?
No!
And then they go into the, so all of them, I don't think they know the original fact that the other person's going to say, but then they have the kind of idea. So all of them then talk about facts to do with the movie Jaws. So one of the facts they talked about, that Steven Spielberg was originally asked to train a great white shark by Hollywood executives. Anyway, so that was quite interesting. Another one they had today was, which was a little bit sad, birds in cages hop in the direction that they are meant to be migrating at the time of year they're meant to be migrating.
Oh, no.
I know, right?
Oh.
So, and then they talked about migrating birds and lots of different facts. So it's kind of a whole lot of things that you don't really need to know, but are really, really interesting once you start hearing information about them. So I highly recommend go listen to a few episodes and see if you like it. No such thing as a fish. What about you?
Brilliant. Okay, so mine is Don't Shoot the Messenger, which is a fantastic name for a podcast anyway to start with. But I have to put a little, what would you call it, an asterisk, an explainer next to this.
Disclaimer.
Like, mate, there you go, a disclaimer. I've lost the use of the English language today. So Carolyn Wilson would hate the term fangirl, but that is exactly what I am of her. She is a football writer and is the chief football writer at the Age newspaper in Melbourne. And my experience of Carolyn Wilson in the past was I started sort of reading her football stories, you know, when I was much younger, and then I'd listen to her on the radio, then I started to watch her on different football shows on the television. And you can imagine football, Australian rules football, it's probably, you know, it's getting much better now than it used to be. But, you know, back in the day, she was really one of the only women that you would ever see talking about football where people did listen to her. And she has a very, her manner, I guess, commanding manner, I guess, to make you listen to her. Nice, deep, strong voice. And really, I love the personality that she brings to football, because I guess she gives you that women's intuition, and she tells me the things that I usually want to know in the background of a story as well.
Yeah.
And she has been the queen at breaking a lot of scoops in football stories. Anyway, but that is the way. And so put that all there, and I've just told you all about her professional side and everything about her working side. But while I've done all of that, I have also sat there and always gone, gee, I like her hair. Gee, she's got a good haircut. You know, all the stuff you're not meant to do when you look at women in media to give them relevance. But, you know, she also, there was just always that thing where I always thought, God, I'd love to meet you or get to know a bit about you. And I went on Twitter once to tell her how fantastic I thought she was in the face of, once again, another adversary activity from some loud, obnoxious man who, because she seems to continually be targeted, you know, by people who want to put her in her place. There's and because we have a very international readership, listeners here, I know that AFL football is of no interest, but if you can imagine, there's other AFL football shows, and there was a guy who came out with a mannequin with her head on it, with a bikini body. And
what?
Yes, on a football show, you know, there's been people on radio shows who have made very aggressive comments about her. You know, we have the ice bucket challenge, and someone said they'd put her head under the water for a little bit longer. Do you know, she seems to attract the aggro of men quite often. And so I wanted to write to her on Twitter once and realized that she didn't really have a Twitter account or active Twitter account, and that I couldn't. So when this podcast popped up, you can imagine my delight, Nikki, because I was just like, oh, wow, because I've heard her in football podcasts, and where she always keeps to the point and talks about football and the nature of football. But this podcast is her and her best friend, who she met at RMIT over 30 years ago when they were both studying to be journalists. They both ended up being football journalists. Her friend went on to move into different areas and be a different style of journalist, and now owns her own bookstore, and her name is Corrie Perkins. But they were Perkins, but they were also each other's bridesmaids. And so they have these conversations.
And godparents to each other's children.
And godparents to each other's children. And so now I get to hear what she's reading, what she's cooking, what she's up to. But I see this woman, do you know, the whole other side of her, of her life and her relationship. And I know I sound so stalkerish right now by saying it, but yes, I am absolutely loving it, because they are both women who have managed to balance kids, career, and they both admit to both having an executive assistant who helped them out, and, you know, in more ways than one, whether it be cooking as well as, you know, life admin. And yeah, I'm just absolutely loving it. But I wonder, Nikki, because you're not a Melbourne Victorian sort of person, and there is a real difference, I think, between New South Wales and Victoria in a lot of ways, in that Australians have, we have different celebrities in those different states that don't cross over and don't transfer. Is it, I mean, because I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to it, but whether it would be of any interest to you at all, or whether you just didn't enjoy
it. Well, I know I did. When you told me about it, I downloaded some episodes and I have listened to them. And I will say, it's, you're right about the Sydney-Melbourne thing, in that there are people that are popular in one area or state and not in another. And I kind of put Melbourne and Adelaide together.
Yes, you should.
And sort of Sydney, yes, and Brisbane together. Yes. Like it's more a northern versus a southern culture.
I agree.
And, you know, but I thought when I was listening to the podcast, I did really enjoy it. But you know what I was thinking? I bet my mother-in-law would love this podcast. So I immediately shot her a Facebook message with the link to the page.
Yes.
And I said, I really think you would love this podcast. So I do.
Tell me what it is about them that you think your mother-in-law would have liked it.
Well, I think that everyone speaks they both speak properly.
Yes.
So it's kind of a little bit more traditional media. It's not podcasts like, you know, everyone using, you know, hip words or... it's just more, I guess it's also, without sounding ageist, it's more an age thing as well, or what's the word?
Yeah, I totally agree. I know what you mean, because I was thinking the same thing, in that I let Carolyn Wilson get away with saying things like, oh, driverless cars will never take off.
Oh my God. Yes. When they said that, I was like, oh my God. That was, to me, I was like, people, that really shocked me when she said that. But she says a lot, I don't want to bring it back to footy, but she does.
Yes.
And so I miss a lot of those references because I don't follow AFL. Shame on me as an Australian. I follow different football codes.
Yeah.
So I miss some of those references, but I really appreciate the conversations that they have. So I did really enjoy it.
Yes.
But I really think that it's maybe a generational, that's the word I was looking for, a generational thing, and in that they're between the age of us and my mother-in-law. So I think that my mother-in-law would find them interesting as well.
In the way, they're probably a good 10 years older than us and 10 years younger than my mother. I think what I love too, when I think about this medium of podcasting as well, is how fantastic that women can kick off a podcast and have an automatic audience and be number one, you know, like, I mean, they came up in my feed as a recommendation. So they're obviously kicking ass with listenership as well.
As they said, they're trending, and they had a grumpy old woman rant about the word trending being a verb. And I was like, that's there. I put that with the driverless cars comment. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, so on the driverless cars, yeah, Karen said, oh, I don't think driverless cars wouldn't ever take off. And, of course, that ship has well and truly sailed. It has taken off, and it will. We've got, you know, you just have to look to America and you can see it well and truly will. But I think if you know of someone's work and absolutely you respect their professionalism in their career and what they do, you forgive them those comments because you go, well, maybe you don't know about that, but God, you know a hell of a lot of a lot about this, do you know? And yeah, that's your thing. Yes.
And I also think you don't dismiss someone for their opinion. You know, it's just their viewpoint.
Yes.
You just, it's actually nice to hear people that have different points of view. And, you know, it'd be great for her to expand on why she doesn't think driverless cars would take off, or why she thinks trending as a verb is a terrible thing. Well, she did go into that. But, yeah, no, I did enjoy it, and I think I will listen to some more episodes.
Yes. You, all right.
Something we agree on.
Okay, books. Read any?
Still a book-free zone here. You know, all the cleverest people in the world read so many books a year. I'm really not one of them. So, no, I do have a new book, and I am going to read it, and I'll discuss it next week.
But you do listen to a lot of audiobooks, which I think is the same. But you obviously haven't been doing a lot of audiobooks.
Oh, no, I count that as reading.
Yes.
And I haven't even done that because I've been so podcast focused. So,
well, I've been no better. I have to say, I bought a couple of books when I was home, but one of the books I did read, and I've put this jokingly, is my boss's book. I work for a guy. Yes. But a book that ruled my life over the summer, I guess, is my boss is commonly known in Australia as the Barefoot Investor. His name is Scott Pape. And obviously he wrote his book last year. It was released in November, but it is still now the top running best-selling book in Australia. It's been 10 months now that his book has been number one in Australia. He's just sold 400,000 copies just this last month. And so what was interesting for me, because I work for Scott remotely, I'll be based here in Doha in Qatar, and he's in Melbourne, and we've got team members who are in the States, and we've got team members all over Australia. But what was weird for me was I got home and his book was everywhere. So my boss's face just seemed to appear from all angles. I would go to Target and there would be a wall of him there, and I would walk past the mall and there would be a wall of him in the front window, and everyone was talking about him. And one of the things he does in his book is tells you to bank with this particular organization and set up these particular bank accounts. I went out to dinner with my oldest, dearest friend from school, and she plonked the card on the table with the writing on it of his suggestions, and she had to say to me, you know, oh, now's the time I confess, you know, I'm a barefooter as well. And it just, he has, you know, cult sort of status now in Australia. So I've gone from working for someone who, you know, a year or so ago I would say, I work for the Barefoot Investor, and someone would say, oh yeah, I read his column, or yeah, I think I've heard of that, to, oh my God, you know, my cousin, auntie, sister, brother read that book, or it changed my life, or whatever. It's been quite bizarre. But anyway, Nikki, on to screens. Tell me about what you've been watching.
Well, I did watch a lot of TV over the holidays because on holidays, I say, summer, a lot of rain, and all the people I knew were out of town. So had a lot of evenings in. And I did watch a lot. But something I've watched more recently was Top of the Lake Series 1. Have you seen Top of the Lake?
I have seen series one. Have you watched series two?
No, I have not watched series two because it's not on any of the things I've got yet. But I just thought it was amazing. Yes. There was something about Elizabeth Moss's Australian accent really ground me the wrong way.
Wasn't it a Kiwi accent?
No, but she's meant to have lived in Sydney since she was 15.
Oh, God. See, so I haven't watched that for ages. I reckon we watched that. How long has it been out for?
2012 it came out,
yes.
I think.
All right, there you go. So we must have watched it back then.
David Wenham, that character is unbelievable, fantastic. I mean, he's such a good actor. I really love him. But obviously the women play all the major roles and are amazing, like just fantastic.
So maybe, Nikki, tell people, so what was it about?
Okay, so Top of the Lake was, it's a miniseries about a female detective who happens to be visiting her mother who is sick with cancer. And while she's there, the daughter of a local drug lord goes missing. She's 12 and she's 5 months pregnant. So the mystery is all about how did she get pregnant and where did she go and what the drug lord has to do with it or not. So it's in a very set in a very small town in New Zealand, and so everything is related to everything else, and all people are related to everything else, and the relationships and the interdependencies are just mad.
Now, it's been a long time since I watched it, but I remember I absolutely loved it. But am I right in saying that you feel freezing cold the whole way through it because it looks freezing cold the whole way through it?
It kind of is, yes, that could be true. But the scenery is spectacular. Yes. I mean, the New Zealand, like, it's just beautiful.
Yeah.
But if you can get past Elizabeth Moss's Australian/Kiwi accent, then you'll really enjoy it. But if you let it bother you, like, and don't let me get in your ear about it at all, but if you let it bother you, it might just niggle at you. But apart from that, I loved it, loved it, loved it.
Now, I read a great interview with Elizabeth Moss recently in The Australian, and she talked about how her and Jane Campion, who directed Top of the Lake, became really good friends, and that I can't remember whether she was at a film festival or she was somewhere where Jane Campion was there as well. And she was there for The Handmaid's Tale, which is what I was going to talk about next. But how there was an envelope shoved under her door and it just said TOL2 as in Top of the Lake 2, Let's talk. And it was from Jane Campion, and how she's kept that envelope. So I gather Top of the Lake 2 is out now. I haven't watched it, but I've heard a lot of conversation about it.
Yes, it is out now, and I was people discussing that made me go and watch the first series because I wanted to do it in the right order.
All right.
Sorry, but I also did watch The Handmaid's Tale. So what did you think about The Handmaid's Tale?
Well, when I work in Australia, my hours are 7 till 10 p.m., right? So when I work in Qatar, it's lovely because I work midday till 3, which is kind of perfect. But when I'm in Australia, that translates to 7 till 10 p.m. And I started watching The Handmaid's Tale after I would finish work at 10 o'clock. I would, you know, hop into bed with my laptop and watch an episode. Very dark and disturbing thing to watch before you go to bed, I can just say. But for those who haven't seen it, premise is it's a Margaret Atwood book or novel, and it's a very dystopian, it's futuristic but set kind of now, isn't it? Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And because, I mean, is that book, am I right? And I hate saying things like this, I don't know. But am I right in saying it's about 30 years old, or maybe not that old, but it's an old book?
I understand it is quite old.
And the reason people are finding it quite disturbing is they are seeing the current political state in America and seeing how something like this could happen. So the idea is the world is sort of turning a terrible shade of grey, climate change is upon us, and therefore food is, you know, coveted in, you know, certain organic foods, and that there are fertility issues in women, and that the government gets a real stronghold on what we can and cannot do, and women who are fertile become handmaids and are used amongst the wealthy and prominent to produce. Is that a fair assessment?
I think it is a very fair assessment, yes.
Yes.
Sounds good.
Once again, Elizabeth Moss is in it and is the starring role, and we see sort of at the beginning episode that she has a partner, she has a child, and then we see they are then trying to escape, because we gradually get, as the series goes on, what's happening in the world and how it got worse and worse and worse and worse, and she ends up a handmaid for this awful couple, who are almost a little bit House of Cards-ish, aren't they?
Yeah.
in their relationship and their style. It's just awful. But yes, and they're constantly trying to impregnate her.
Yes, in the ritual, which is very distressing.
So I found it really dark, but also fascinating. But God, a couple of those gruesome scenes where, you know, handmaids would get out of line and lose a hand or lose an eye, or, you know, as punishment for their behaviour. But also the Jezebels, when they would go to the nightclubs where the Jezebels were, like the type of woman you could choose to be.
It's all very disturbing. You have to be a certain type. You can't be, you know.
Yes.
There's no freedom. Everything's subject to classification.
Yes, yes. So really the only types of women were wives, handmaids, or Jezebels.
Or the Marthas.
Yes, that's right. I hadn't read the book, and I won't, I would say, because I'm not a lover of dystopian fiction. I don't know if you are. My daughter loves dystopian fiction.
We've talked about this before. Yes. So has she watched this?
No, I told her about it. I said to her, have you heard about The Handmaid's Tale? And it hadn't fallen into her 17-year-old world. And she is very well read and watches a lot of things. And, she hadn't, but she was about to.
Interesting.
Now,
interesting.
Nikki, there's one last thing that I want to talk about, and you have to stop me at any time if I cross the line, okay? So
okay.
We haven't talked about this a lot, but I think you have started a Facebook group recently for expats who, and what is the Facebook group called, and how do you explain it?
It's called Expat Kids Learning Differently, and the group is for people who have children who are third culture kids or expats who travel with their children, and they don't necessarily fit in the school environment that they're in. So maybe kids that have therapy, or that have learned differently, learning differences, or maybe they're homeschooled, maybe they're not, depending on what country you're in. So I've talked before that my son has a diagnosis of Asperger's and ADHD, and, you know, depending on which country we are in, depends on the different diagnosis, depends on different medications they want to give him, different therapies. So what I wanted to do was, I've been looking for a while to find a group, and I couldn't really find one. So to form a group where when people move countries, they can look for support and just talk about things that work in schools or in homeschooling that you're doing, so that can be shared, which is a very long explanation.
No, that's a brilliant explanation. So are you telling me, just getting a little bit off track of where I was going, but are you telling me that when you're in America, your son is diagnosed as being something, but maybe in Hamburg they might say it's something else?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Although in Hamburg they can't do it because they don't have anyone who can do an English evaluation. So they suggest you take him to a different country for an evaluation. But yes, he's been diagnosed differently in different countries, and definitely on the medication. So when we lived in South Africa, they wouldn't give him one kind of medication without giving him another kind. And that kind is kind of frowned on in the rest of the world. And it's a very difficult path that people tread, that, you know, and we launched into the world with a baby. Like, we had no idea about his future or what would happen. So, you know, a lot of people are in the exact same situation as me, or a different, you know, same, but different situation as us and our family. So I just think that there's a really big not a need, but there's an opportunity to share experiences. And, you know, sometimes you just say to someone, oh, well, for example, the other day I posted in the group and I posted about something I'd seen online about a therapy service in Australia that does therapy for people that live in rural areas. So, you know, they do it via Skype. And then they also do it for people that live in Asia because they're on the same time zone. So they do it for expats as well. And I said that I'd never thought before about seeking what therapies or what support system there would be in Australia because we don't live there. But one day we will. So it would be interesting to know that. And someone who is an American living in Northern Territory wrote back on the page and said, wow, thanks so much for this. I didn't know this existed.
Yes.
So just one little thing like that could just change someone's life, you know, or just change their perception or their ability to deal with the situation. And that's what I'm trying to do, really.
Yeah, which is brilliant. So on that, and this is me saying once again with the disclaimer, if I step over the line, just say we're not talking about that. But I watched with my boys and G over the weekend. We had the Netflix binge and we sat down and watched the entire series over two nights of Atypical. And so Atypical is on Netflix for those who have it, and it is I don't know exactly how many episodes, I want to say eight maybe, about American family, son who wants to start dating, has autism, and he has a sister who's couple years older. No, younger, isn't she? Yes, she's younger, because that was the bit that surprised me. So the sister who's a couple years younger, so he's 18, she must be 16 if that's how it works. Fascinating look at a family where you see how his autism has affected each family member, but also it's sort of a comedy slash drama slash I'm not even sure. But the whole way through it, I just kept thinking, I wonder what Nikki thinks of this, or I wonder what the world of autism thinks of this, and I want you to tell me.
Did you enjoy it?
I loved it, and my kids loved it, and they loved him.
And do they recognize people that they know at school or know in real life?
So no, I would say they didn't peg anyone out and say, oh, gee, that's exactly like John, or, you know, that's exactly like Peter. No, so, but I don't think they really thought too much about the autism side of things, do you know?
Yeah, no, I get what you mean. So it's highly controversial in autism circles, as a lot of shows that try. So it's about, you got to start somewhere, right? So Ellen DeGeneres, when she came out, you know, putting a gay character in a TV show, now that would never happen in that way. You know, now gay characters are just regular people on a show. Yes. They're not specifically the gay person.
Yes.
So in the autism community, it's got mixed reactions. A lot of parents love it. They're showing the struggle of a family. And that's us people who we call ourselves neurotypical, because our brain works in a way that a lot of other people's brain works.
Yes.
Typical. That's how we perceive the struggles or the family dynamic or whatever. Whereas adults with autism see it as trying to stereotype someone with autism. And you know, the rule is, if you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism, because everyone is so different. And I totally can see both sides of it, and I respect both sides of it. But as a parent, like, seeing the family interactions, seeing, you know, the sibling who's kind of a bit neglected but very capable individual, but a bit neglected by the parents because of what has to go on with the brother, and then the mother being overwhelmed and obsessed, and okay, there's an affair situation. I'm not saying I'm going there, but, you know, like, but going down that path, and then the father being wanting to contribute, wanting to connect, but not feeling able to connect. And then, you know, he goes to a therapy session and he's using the wrong words, and they all yell at him for using the wrong words, you know. And I can, that is just real life. Like,
yes.
To me, that is really easily relatable. But I'm looking at it from the point of view of a parent. And, you know, my son is, you know, he's going through a lot of those same things. I mean, he's 14, not 18, but it's a similar situation. Like he's not the same as the kid on the show, but he has similarities. So, you know, the way his mind thinks about things, the way he, you know, he wants to have relationships, friends, girlfriends, etc. So it just... You know, it's, to me, it was very relatable. And the first episode, I think I told you, like, I sobbed, and then I didn't cry after that. But the first, like, it was just so overwhelming to watch it all in place. And just, you know, you, everything you see, you kind of relate to yourself in these kind of situations. So I really enjoyed it. I will continue to watch it. I see the constraints that people have pointed out about it, but, you know, I think you got to start somewhere. And, you know, I think Parenthood started with putting a character on the autism spectrum in there. You know, but shows have got to keep doing it.
Yes.
until it doesn't become, you know, oh, that's, you know, this show about an autistic person, you know, or there's an autistic person in the show, you know, like it's just another person.
Yeah.
I hope that explains how.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Look, and I would highly recommend people watch it because it was a great series. I have to say, for family viewing, my guys are 11 and 13, and I think there was a few things that I hope just went over someone's head. Now, did your kids watch it with you?
No, they haven't seen it.
Yes.
My son, I don't know whether he would like to watch it. Mm. He doesn't like to see things like that, which is fine for him, but he feels uncomfortable in those situations, seeing those kinds of things portrayed. But, you know, it might happen.
Yes.
They watch things at school. So last year they studied in his class, they studied the curious incident of the dog in the nighttime.
Yes.
And his English teacher said it just transformed his experience. So he became an expert. You know, he would explain to the people in the class about why the boy was thinking that way or doing those things. And he said it, he just understood, you know, what the book was about, whereas, you know, some of his classmates didn't have that same experience. So, you know, and then they watched some shows about, not atypical, but they watched an English version of a show, a similar thing. So, you know, it's not inconceivable that he will watch it in the future. I'm certainly going to get my husband to watch it.
No, look, I thought it was brilliant. Our entire family enjoyed it. There were adult themes that my 11-year-old probably shouldn't have seen. But I also do think quite often those things go straight over their head. Do you know? There's no sex that you see on the screen. There's nothing, do you know, like they cut every time they get close to anything like that happening. There's a bit of bad language, but you and I've talked about this before. My kids, I've given up on watching anything without any language in it anymore. Like, we just have to say, not in this, you know, you can watch it on the telly, but you're not to say it. But yeah, I thought it was great. I thought it was really, really good. And, you know, just, I thought they portrayed the sensory stuff really well. So the way that they filmed that you would hear the clinking of bangles or the, you know, the clicks or the, you know, the beeps. Yep. And the traffic and all of that, what that could be like. And I just thought it was really well done. All right, Nikki, I think we have well and truly gone over our limit of time, but it's so nice to be back in the world of podcasting. And I will say it once again, please, please, please go to the website twofatexpats.com and click on the microphone and tell us, who was your first expat friend? How did you meet? And we'll put all of those responses for next week.
Also, if you can, and if you haven't, join the group Two Fat Expats on Facebook, and please leave us a review if you haven't yet on iTunes.
All right. I'm going to say goodbye and I'll see you next week.
Bye.